Chapter 15. Mantell, North Nekapet, 2566. They bluffed, Sluka said, just as a sudden false dawn shone over the northeasterly horizon, turning the intervening ridges and bluffs into serrated black cutouts. The glare was magnesium bright, edged in purple. Briefly, it overloaded whole strips of Sylvest's vision, leaving numb voids where it had burned.
Care to take another guess? He asked.
For a moment, Sluka seemed unable to answer. She only stared at the flare, mesmerized by its radiance and the message of atrocity it brought.
He told you they'd do it, Pascal said. You should have listened to him. He knew these people. He knew they'd do exactly what they promised.
I never thought they would,
Sluka said, her voice so quiet that it seemed she was talking to herself. Despite the glare, it was still a totally silent evening, free even of the usual music of Resurgam's winds.
I thought their threat was too monstrous to take seriously.
Nothing's too monstrous for them.
Sylvest's eyes were returning to normality now, enough that he could read the expressions of the women who were standing next to him on Mantell's mesa.
From now on, you'd better take Volyova at her word. She means what she said. In 24 hours, she'll do it all again, unless you turn me over.
It was as if Sluka had not heard him.
Perhaps we ought to get down, was all she said.
Sylvest agreed, though before they headed back into the mesa, they took time to crudely measure the direction from which the flash had come.
We know when it happened, Sylvest said, and we know the direction. When the pressure wave comes through, we'll know how far away it was. Settlements on Resurgam are still widely spread, so we should be able to pinpoint it.
She said the name of the place, Pascal said.
Sylvest nodded. But while I'd believe any threat she made, I also know Volyova's not to be trusted.
I don't know anything about Phoenix, Sluka said, as they descended via a cargo elevator. I thought I knew most of the recent settlements. But then again, I've not exactly been at the heart of government these last few years.
She would have started with something small, Sylvest said. Otherwise, she wouldn't have room to escalate. We can assume Phoenix was a soft target, a scientific or geological outpost, something on which the rest of the colony wasn't materially dependent. Just people, in other words.
Sluka shook her head. We're talking about them in the past tense, and we never even discussed them in the present. It's like their only reason for existing was so they could die.
Sylvest felt physically sick, on the nauseous cusp of actually vomiting. It was, he thought, the only occasion in his life when this feeling had been engendered by an external event, something in which he was not directly participating. He had not even felt this way when Karine Lefebvre had died. The mistake, the error, had not been his to commit. And while he had argued with Sluka that the crew would inflict what they threatened, some part of him had clung to the idea that, ultimately, they would not. That he was wrong, and Sluka and the other humanitarians were correct. Perhaps, had he been in Sluka's position, he too would have ignored the warning, irrespective of how sure he had felt before the attack. The cards always look different when it's your turn to play them, loaded with subtly different possibilities. The pressure wave came 3 hours later. By then it was little more than a gust, but it was a gust completely out of place on such a still night. After it had passed, the air was turbulent, prone to sudden squalls, as if a full-blooded razor storm was on the verge. Timing of the shock indicated that the site of the attack was somewhat less than 3,500 miles away. Seismic data also confirmed this, almost due northeast, according to the visual evidence. Retiring under guard to Sluka's stateroom, they pushed themselves beyond sleep with strong coffee, calling up global maps of the colony from Mantell's archives. Feeling edgy, Sylvest sipped his drink.
Like you say, it could be a new settlement they've hit. Are these maps up to date?
As good as, Sluka said. They were refreshed from Cuvier's central cartographic sections about a year ago, before things became too serious around here.
Sylvest looked at the map, projected over Sluka's table like a ghostly topographic tablecloth. The area displayed by the map was 2,000 kilometers square. Large enough to contain the destroyed colony, even if their directional estimate was crude. But there was no sign of Phoenix.
We need more recent maps, he said. It's possible this place was founded in the last year. That's not going to be easy to arrange. Then you'd better find a way. You have to make a decision in the next 24 hours. Probably the biggest of your life. Don't flatter yourself. I've as good as decided to let them have you.
Sylvester shrugged, as if it were of no consequence to him. Even so, you should still be in possession of the facts. You're going to be dealing with Volyova. If you can't be sure that her threats are genuine, you might be tempted to call her bluff.
She looked at him long and hard. We do still have, in principle, data links to Cuvier, via what remains of the Comsat girdle. But they've barely been used since the domes were blown. It would be risky to open them. The data trail could lead back to us.
I'd say that's the least of anyone's worries right now.
He's right, Pascal said. With all this going on, who's going to care about a minor breach of security in Cuvier? I'd say it would be worthwhile just to get the maps updated.
How long will it take?
An hour. 2 hours. Why? Were you planning on going somewhere?
No, Sylvester said, conspicuously failing to smile. But someone else might be deciding for me.
They went surface side again while they were waiting for the maps to be revised. There were no stars visible in the low northeast, just a hump of sooty nothingness, as if a gargantuan crouched figure were looming over the horizon. It must have been an uplifted wall of dust edging towards them.
It'll blanket the world for months, Sluka said, just as if a massive volcano had gone off.
The winds are getting stronger, Sylvester said.
Pascal nodded.
Could they have done that? Changed the weather this far from the attack? What if the weapon they used caused radioactive contamination?
It needn't have been, Sylvester said. Some kind of kinetic energy weapon would have sufficed.
Knowing Volyova, she wouldn't have done anything more than was absolutely necessary.
But you're right to worry about radiation.
That weapon probably opened a hole right through the lithosphere. It's anyone's guess what was released from the crust.
We shouldn't spend too much time surface side.
Agreed. But that probably goes for the colony as a whole.
One of Sluka's aides appeared in the exit door.
You've got the maps? She asked.
Give us another half hour, he said. We've got the data, but the encryption's pretty heavy. There's news from Cuvier, though. We just picked it up, publicly broadcast.
Go on.
It seems the ship took pictures of the, aftermath. They transmitted them to the capital, and now they've been sent around the planet.
The aide took a battered compad from his pocket, its flat screen throwing his features into lilac relief.
I have the images.
You'd better show us.
The aide placed the compad on the mesa's gritty, wind-smoothed surface. They must have used infrared, he said. The pictures were awesome and terrifying. Molten rock was still snaking from the crater and beyond, or spraying in fountain-like cascades from dozens of suddenly birthed baby volcanoes. All evidence of the settlement had been obliterated, completely swallowed by the wide cauldron of the crater, which must have been a kilometer or two across. There were vast patches of glassy smoothness near its center, like solidified tar, black as night.
For a moment I hoped we were wrong, Sluka said. I hoped that the flash, even the pressure wave, I hoped that somehow they'd been faked like a theatrical effect. But I can't see how they could have faked this without actually blowing a hole in the planet.
We'll know in a while, the aide said. I presume I can speak freely?
This concerns Sylvester, Sluka said. So he may as well hear it.
Cuvier has a plane heading towards the site of the attack. They'll be able to confirm that this imagery wasn't fabricated. By the time they returned underground, the maps had been cracked, replacing the outdated copies in Mantell's archive. Once again they retired to Sluka's stateroom to review the data. This time the map's accompanying information showed that it had been updated only a few weeks earlier.
They've done pretty well, Sylvester said. To have kept up with the business of cartography while the city was crumbling around them. I admire their dedication.
Never mind their motives, Sluka said,
brushing her fingers against one of the pedestal-mounted globes which flanked the room, seemingly to anchor herself to the planet, which now seemed to be spinning irrevocably beyond her control,
as long as Phoenix, or whatever they called it, is there. That's all I care.
It's there all right, Pascal said. Her finger penetrated the projected terrain, arrowing a tiny, labeled dot in the otherwise unpopulated northeastern ranges. It's the only thing so far north, she said, and the only settlement in remotely the right direction. It's called Phoenix, too. What else do you have on it? Sluka's aide, he was a small man with a delicately oiled mustache and goatee, spoke softly into his sleeve-mounted compad, instructing the map to zoom in on the settlement. A series of demographic icons popped into existence above the table. Not much, he said. Just a few multi-family surface shacks linked by tubes. A few underground workings. No ground connections. Although they did have a landing pad for aircraft.
Population?
I don't think population's quite the word for it, the man said. Just 100 or so. About 18 family units. Most of them from Cuvier, by the look of this. He shrugged. Actually, if this was her idea of a strike against the colony, I think we did remarkably well. 100 or so people. Well, it's a tragedy. But I'm surprised she didn't play her hand against a more populous target. The fact that none of us really knew this place existed. It almost nullifies the act, don't you think?
A splendidly inept thing, Sylvester said, nodding despite himself.
What?
The human capacity for grief. It just isn't capable of providing an adequate emotional response once the dead exceed a few dozen in number. And it doesn't just level off. It just gives up, resets itself to zero. Admit it, none of us feel a damn about these people.
Sylvester looked at the map, wondering what it must have been like for the inhabitants, given those few seconds of warning which Valjova had prescribed them. He wondered if any of them had taken the trouble to leave their dwellings and face the sky, in order to quicken, fractionally, the coming annihilation.
But I do know one thing. We have all the evidence we need that she's a woman of her word, and that means you have to let me go to them.
I'm reluctant to lose you, Sluka said, but it isn't like I have much choice in the matter. You'll be wanting to contact them, of course.
Naturally, Sylvester said, and of course Pascal will be coming with me. But there's one thing I'd like you to do for me first.
A favor?
Sluka sounded amused, as if this were the last thing in the world she would have expected from him.
Well, what can I do for you, now that we've become such firm friends?
Sylvester smiled. Actually, it's not so much what you can do for me, as what Dr. Falkander can. It concerns my eyes, you see. From the vantage point of her floating boom-suspended seat, the Triumvir observed the handiwork she had wrought on the planet below. It was all perfectly clear, imaged precisely on the bridge's projection sphere. In the last 10 hours she had observed the wound extend dark cyclonic tendrils away from its focus, evidence that the weather in that region, and by implication elsewhere on the planet, had been tipped towards a violent new equilibrium. According to the locally culled data, the colonists on Resurgam called such phenomena razor storms, on account of the merciless flensing quality of the airborne dust. It was fascinating to watch, much like the dissection of some unfamiliar animal species. Although she had had more experience with planets than many of her crewmates, there were still things about them which she found surprising and not a little disturbing. It was disturbing that simply puncturing a hole in the planet's integument could have this much effect, not just on the immediate locality of the place she had attacked, but thousands of kilometers beyond. Eventually, she knew, there would not be a spot on the planet which had not been in some measurable way affected by her action. The dust she had caused to be elevated would eventually settle. A fine, blackened, faintly radioactive caul deposited fairly uniformly around the planet. In the temperate regions, it would soon be washed away by the weather processes which the colonists had instigated, assuming, of course, that those processes still functioned. But in the Arctic regions, there was never any rain, so the fine fall of dust would remain unperturbed for centuries to come. Eventually, other deposits would cover it, and it would become part of the irrevocable geological memory of the planet. Perhaps, the Triumvir mused, in a few million years, other beings would arrive on Resurgam, sharing something of humanity's curiosity. They would want to learn of the planet's history, and in doing so they would take core samples,
reaching far back into Resurgam's past. Doubtless that deposited layer of dust would not be the only mystery they had to solve, but nonetheless they would mull on it, if only fleetingly. And she had no doubt that those hypothetical future investigators would come to a totally wrong conclusion regarding the layer's origin. It would never occur to them that it had been put there by an act of conscious volition. Volyova had slept only a few hours in the last 30, but her nervous energy currently seemed limitless. She would, of course, pay a price for it at some point in the near future, but for now she felt like she was careering, imbued with unstoppable momentum. Even so, she did not immediately snap to alertness when Hegazi steered his chair next to hers.
"What is it?" "I'm getting something which might very much be our boy.
Sylvester,
or someone pretending to be him."
Hegazi entered one of his intermittent phases of fugue, which to Volyova signified that he was in deep rapport with the ship.
"Can't trace the communication route he's using. It's coming from Cuvier. But you can bet Sylvester isn't physically there."
She did not raise her voice, even though the two of them were quite alone in the bridge.
"What's he saying?" "He's just asking to speak to us, over and over again."
Curry heard footsteps sloshing through the inch-thick sludge which flooded the entire captain's level. She did not have a rational answer for why she had come down here. Perhaps that was the point, really. Now that she no longer trusted Volyova, the one person she had thought she could place her faith in, and now that the Mademoiselle was absent, as she had been ever since the attack against the cash weapon, Curry had to turn to the irrational. The only person left on the ship who had not in some way betrayed her, or had not earned her hatred, was the one she could never expect an answer from. She knew almost immediately that the footsteps did not belong to Volyova, but there was a purposefulness to them which suggested that the person knew exactly where they were going, and had not simply strolled into this area of the ship by accident. Curry got up out of the muck. The seat of her trousers was wet and cold with the stuff, but the darkness of the fabric concealed most of the damage.
"Relax," said the person, strolling casually round the bend, her boots sloshing through the sludge.
There was a glint of metal from the woman's free-swinging arms, and a multicolored glow from the holographic designs worked into the arm's metalwork.
"Sujik," Curry identified. "How the hell did you—"
Sujik shook her head with a tight-lipped smile. "How did I find my way down here?"
"Simple, Curry. I followed you. Once I saw which general direction you'd gone, it was obvious you must be headed here. So I came after you, because I reckon you and I could use a little chat."
"A chat?
About the situation here."
Sujik gestured expansively. "On this ship. More specifically, the fucking Triumvirate. It can't have escaped you that I have a grievance against one of them."
"Volyova?"
"Yes, our mutual friend Ilya."
Sujik managed to make the woman's name sound like a particularly unsavory expletive.
"She killed my lover. You know that.
I understand there had been problems."
"Problems? Ah, that's a good one. Do you call turning someone psychotic a problem, Curry?"
She paused, stepped a little closer, but still kept a respectful distance from the fused angelic core of the captain.
"Or maybe I should call you Anna, now that we're on, closer terms."
"Call me what you want. It doesn't alter anything. I may hate her guts right now, but that doesn't mean I'm about to betray her. We shouldn't even be having this conversation."
Sujik nodded sagely. "She really hit you with that loyalty therapy, didn't she? Look, Sajaki and the others are not nearly as omniscient as you'd think. You can tell me everything."
"There's a lot more to it than that."
"Such as?"
Sujik was standing akimbo now, her gauntleted hands placed daintily against her narrow hips. The woman was beautiful in the emaciated way which was common among the spaceborn. Her physiology was wraith-like. Had her underlying skeletal muscular structure not been chimerically enhanced, it was doubtful she would have been fully ambulatory in normal gravity. But now, with those subcutaneous augmentations, Sujik was undoubtedly stronger and faster than any non-augmented human. Her strength was double-edged,
because she looked so fragile. She was like an origami sculpture of a woman folded from razor-sharp paper.
"I can't tell you," Kuri said, "but Ilya and I, we have mutual secrets."
Instantly she regretted saying that, but she wanted to deflate the smug superiority of the Ultra.
"What I mean is, listen, I'm sure that's the way she wants you to feel, but ask yourself this, Kuri. How much of what you remember is real? Isn't it possible that Valuova's been screwing with your memories? She tried it with Boris. She tried to cure him by erasing his past, but it didn't work. He still had the voices to deal with.
That go for you, too? Any new voices floating around in your head?
If there are, Kuri said, they haven't got anything to do with Valuova.
So you admit it.
Sojik smiled primly, like a valiant schoolgirl acknowledging victory in a game, but hoping not to look too proud of the fact.
Well, whether you do or don't, it doesn't matter. The fact is you're disillusioned with her, with the triumvirate as a whole. You can't kid yourself you liked what they just did.
I'm not sure I understand what it was they just did, Sojik. There are a few things I haven't got right in my head.
Kuri felt the cold, wet fabric of her trousers clinging to her buttocks.
That's why I came down here, as a matter of fact, for some peace and quiet, to get my head together,
and see if he had wisdom to spare.
Sojik had nodded towards the captain.
He's dead, Sojik.
I may be the only person here who recognizes that, but it's true all the same.
Maybe Sylvest can cure him. Even if he could, would Sajaki want it to happen?
Sojik nodded knowingly.
Of course, of course. I understand totally. But listen.
Her voice lowered to a conspiratorial whisper, though the only possible eavesdroppers were the skulking rats.
They've found Sylvest. I just heard before I came down.
Found him? You mean he's here?
No, of course not. They've just made contact. They don't even know where he is yet, just that he's alive. Still got to get the bastard aboard somehow. And that's where you come in.
Me too, in fact.
What do you mean?
I don't pretend to understand what happened with Kerval in the training chamber, Kuri. Maybe she just cracked, although I knew her better than anyone else on the ship, and I'd say she wasn't really the cracking type. Whatever it was, it gave Valuova an excuse to finish her off. Not that I ever thought the bitch really hated her that much.
It wasn't Valuova's fault.
Whatever. Sojik shook her head. That's not important. Just now. But what it means is she needs you for the mission. You and me, Kuri, and maybe the bitch queen herself, are going down there to retrieve him. You can't know that yet.
Sojik shook her head. Not officially, I can't. But when you've been aboard this ship as long as I have, you'll know a thing or two about bypassing the usual channels.
For a moment, there was only silence, broken by the distant dripping of a leaking conduit. Some distance down the flooded corridor.
Sojik, why are you telling me this? I thought you hated my guts.
Maybe I did, the woman said, once. But now we need all the allies we can get, and I thought you might appreciate forewarning, especially if you've got any sense, and you know who to trust.
Valuova addressed her bracelet.
Infinity. I want you to correlate the voice you're about to hear against shipboard records of Sylvest. If you can't confirm a match, let me know immediately via secure readout.
Sylvest's voice burst in on them mid-sentence.
If you are reading me.
Repeat. I need to know if you are reading me. I demand that you acknowledge me, bitch. I demand that you fucking acknowledge me.
That's him, all right, Valuova said, speaking over the man's voice.
I'd know that petulant tone anywhere. Better put him out of it.
I presume we still don't have a fix on him?
Sorry. You're going to have to address the colony as a whole and assume he has a means of reading you. I'm sure he won't have neglected that detail.
Valuova consulted her bracelet, observing that the ship could so far not disprove the hypothesis that the voice she was hearing belonged to Sylvest. There was room for error, since the Sylvest who had come aboard the ship once before was a much younger counterpart of the one they were now looking for, and so the voice match was not expected to be perfect.
But even allowing for that, it looked increasingly likely that they had found him, and that this was not simply another hapless impersonator coming forward to save the colony.
All right, patch me through. Sylvester, this is Volyova. Tell me if you're hearing this.
His voice was clearer now.
About fucking time. I think we'll take that as a yes,
Hegazi said.
We need to discuss the logistics of picking you up, and I believe it would be very much easier if we could do so on a secure channel. If you give me your current location, we can make a detailed sensor sweep of that region and pick up your transmission at source, avoiding the relay at Cuvier. Now, why would you need to do that? Is there something you want me to know that the colony as a whole can't share?
Sylvester paused, but Volyova mentally inserted a sneer at that point. After all, you haven't been slow in bringing them into it so far.
Another pause.
Incidentally, it troubles me that I'm dealing with you and not Sir Jackie.
He's indisposed, Volyova said. Give me your position.
Sorry, but that isn't possible.
You'll have to do better than that.
Why should I bother? You're the ones with all the firepower.
You figure out the solution.
Hegazi waved his hand, signaling Volyova to cut the audio link.
Maybe he can't reveal his position.
Can't? Hegazi tapped a steel forefinger against his steel-bridged nose.
His captors might not let him. They're ready to let him go, but they don't want to give up their position.
Volyova nodded, admitting that Hegazi's suggestion was probably close to the truth. She reinstated the link.
All right, Sylvester. I think I understand your predicament. I propose the following compromise, assuming that you have the means to move around. Your, hosts can doubtless arrange something at short notice, I presume.
We have transportation, if that's what you're asking.
You have 6 more hours, in that case. Enough time to get to a location sufficiently far from where you are now that you won't compromise it when you reveal your position. But if in 6 hours we don't hear from you, we will bring forward the attack against the next target. Is that perfectly clear to all concerned?
Oh, yes, Sylvester said tartly.
Perfectly clear. There's one more thing.
Yes,
bring Calvin with you.